And welcome to the Taylor Report. We just dropped in to see what condition our condition was in. It's CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon.
Good afternoon, Phil.
Conlon is well known for the program Wednesdays at 6 to 8 p.m. Classical Underground. Today we're going to talk about the, quote, crisis in Burundi. And later in the show we will talk to Robin Philpott of Baraka Books about there's been another journalist, a little scandal in Quebec, French journalism, Francophone journalism of Canada, kind of important story. It's front page apparently in today's Figaro, and so we're being read about in France, and front page on the weekend in La Presse. The issue is a journalist who appears not to have been actually present when a lot of his interviews were conducted. So, again, it's a Taylor Report. And we will be talking, we hope, shortly with Gerald O'Coman. He's a political analyst based in Paris. He's a frequent contributor to Russia Today and Press TV. He's published articles on global research, Dissident Voice, and other independent media outlets. He also appeared on Al Jazeera, has contributed to Venezuela's Radio del Sur. Very, very important. By the way, we love all those outlets. And this article of his appeared in Global Research, and it's very apropos of what's going on. And we're hearing bits and pieces of the story, and there's certainly a lot of heat being generated in various capitals over it. The title of its piece is, Are the U.S. and the EU Sponsoring Terrorism in Burundi? And it was published in the May 15, 2015 Global Research. I really urge you to go to that site. And, of course, if you just enter his name, you will find him. He's had a number of articles on the kind of topics that we take up on the Taylor Report. I saw it recently on RT.com debating someone in Turkey about the ISIS organization, and he was handling himself very well. And I think we're joined now by Gerald O'Coman. Are you there, sir?
I am indeed.
Hey, thank you very much for talking to us. You have a terrific article, in my opinion, in the Global Research of May 16, titled, Are the U.S. and the EU Sponsoring Terrorism in Burundi? Definitely, starting with your title, you have a different take on what we read in the mainstream media. So let's just start with that idea. What are the U.S., what are their interests there, and what are they up to, in your opinion?
Well, I think the geopolitical interests of the United States and the European Union in the Great Lakes region are complex to begin with. The historical context is probably take a while to explain, but the I think there is a reshuffling of borders going on all the time in that region. So, for example, Eastern Congo, the Kivu region, is a region that is tremendously rich in resources. The Congo was invaded in 1996 by U.S. proxy forces under General Kagame, who is the current leader of Rwanda. Mm-hmm. And that whole Kagame is a client of the United States and Europe. Mm-hmm. And has been supported militarily and so on, and in the mass media as well, has been presented as the man who put an end to the Rwanda genocide, when in fact it was Kagame's forces that caused the genocide, because they invaded the country from 1991 to 1994, leading to the genocide. So that, in a way, is the context that mm-hmm. would kind of through which one should look at Burundi. Burundi is they had a civil war there for over 12 years that ended in 2005, and in 2005 there was a kind of a power sharing agreement between the majority Hutus and the minority Tutsi, mm-hmm. who had ruled the country for over 30 years and have been accused by the Hutus of having killed up to 4.5 million people. Now, the Tutsi regime was supported by France and the European powers and the United States for a very long time. So there are huge issues from an historical perspective in terms of finding out just exactly what happened during the dictatorship. And then there are huge issues to do with the Great Lakes region in terms of resources. Yes. Burundi itself is one of the least globalized countries in the world. The agricultural system there is pretty much subsistence. But they have significant resources. They've got one-sixth of the world's nickel supplies. There are much more complex issues to do with the kind of reshuffling, as it were, that has taken place in that region for over the last 20 years.
Yeah. Let me ask you
one of the things that would cause a problem, I think, for the United States is if the truth comes out about the genocide, that would affect the official narrative of the genocide in Rwanda.
Yeah, this came up recently. It's been unfolding in an interesting way. I was going back and looking at some of the recent reports in April, and I noticed that that France, that you were describing as former colonial power, they tried to get a resolution at the UN Security Council, which basically would have been to undermine the present government of Burundi, but they were prevented on that by Russia and China. And the issue was, the Russian delegate said, the constitution of Burundi is not appropriate subject for the UN Security Council. And yet,
of course not.
And when we read the media here, we would think we were all supposed to pass judgment on this so-called constitutional debate. Can you shed some light on what that's about?
Yeah, well, Russian foreign policy is based on a very strict interpretation of international law. And under the very basis of international law is that nation states have to respect other nation states. And nation states that have constitutions are run according to those constitutions. And each country is obliged to manage its own affairs. I cannot possibly run your household. That's your job. If you've got a problem in your household, I can't knock down, your door and come in and say, hey, it's your problem.
Yeah. Unless I have Chapter 7.
Yeah, I mean, it's even if you have a problem in your household and so on, I still have no right to knock your door down and solve it. So we cannot possibly have an international order or an international system if one group of states decides they can intervene all over the place whenever they feel it's in their interest to do so. And so the Russian and Chinese approaches, that is absolutely of no significance for global stability because that is an internal issue, and if people stay out of it, it will be resolved. But of course, the issue here in I should also point out that the issue is not about the election, about the candidacy of Nkurunziza. Nkurunziza, his candidature is perfectly legal in the sense that it's legal according to the laws of the country. The Constitutional Council have decided that he can run, and that's that. You know, there's just nothing anybody can do about that. It's something that's decided in the country. But the point I would make is that if the French Constitutional Council made a decision, you would not have an international crisis over that, you know.
Yeah.
But when it comes to an African country, their laws don't count. You know, that's the double standard that you have in international relations today. But for the Chinese and the Russians, they don't look at it in that sense. Their interpretation of law is quite strict.
Yeah.
Whereas Western powers is kind of, we are the law, and that's the problem if you're in the southern hemisphere of the globe.
Yes.
So the real issue is they don't want Pierre Nkurunziza to run for technically a second term because he wasn't elected by the people the very first time. He was nominated by Parliament. So he is technically entitled to run. There's no issue there. They want to destabilize the country. I think there is something very sinister happening in Burundi that is part of a much broader regional destabilization and escalation of violence.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have the rather the United States and others, and incidentally, your article points out that the Francophone press has really been vilifying, demonizing the regime. I shouldn't say regime, the government of Burundi. And the United States has played a role, which they always advertise themselves as coming to bring reconciliation and to establish this phenomenon called civil society and such. And your article deals with that very, very well. And particularly you bring up this the National Endowment for Democracy, a wonderful institution created by the very progressive American United States Congress. Could you tell us about their role there?
Yeah, well, the National Endowment for Democracy was set up in 1983 under the Reagan administration because U.S. foreign policy in Latin America in particular, but in the global south, throughout the globe, was very unpopular due to support for military dictatorships in almost every country where the U.S. had an interest. And so all of Latin America were being assaulted by the most brutal forms of fascist-type military regimes, and it didn't. It made the U.S. very unpopular. It was a period when the U.S. was still felt that it wasn't winning the Cold War. They were supporting the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, and these people were psychopaths and. It was becoming a bit like today, kind of embarrassing. So the National Endowment Democracy was set up to sort of to try and market U.S. foreign policy and sell it and make it look progressive and sort of and popular.
It has a nice ring to it, Endowment exactly. for Democracy. What could be nicer than
exactly,
that?
Yeah. So the National Endowment Democracy, what it does is it trains activists all over the globe. In countries where the U.S. Has an interest, and that's every country, So basically, they train them in things which, are, you know, on the face of it, look very progressive, like human rights or journalism or free press and how to set up a blog and that kind of stuff. But really what it is actually forming fake oppositions, creating fake oppositions to... governments that don't rule according to U.S. interests. But actually, sometimes they set up fake oppositions to dictators who have actually served U.S. interests for a long time. So, for example, the Arab Spring. Everybody talks about the Arab Spring starting in 2011. The Arab Spring started much, much earlier, around 2004, when the United States started training the activists of the Arab Spring in Tunisia and Egypt. And that was confirmed recently by former U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. And the reason was is because for that is because Mubarak was not interested in sending Egyptian troops for the occupation of Iraq, and suddenly became quite intransigent and was seen as no longer favorable and no longer reliable, and so they decided to create a new Middle East. So that strategy of training pseudo-revolutionaries for a very destructive nihilistic politics is now being exported right throughout the continent of Africa. They're operative in almost every country, and it doesn't matter whether it's a good leader in power or a bad leader in power, you've got all of these so-called civil society groups who are basically creating chaos. Yeah. It's a very, very worrying development.
Ready and able. As I notice, very apropos, there's a quote in one of the journals, might be in your article. It's a Floride Ahitungiyi. She's called a Burundian director of Search for Common Ground. Search for Common Ground. That turns out is an American NGO of some type. And she says, journalists were trained in conflict resolution. I want to ask you about this. They say they're trained in conflict resolution. The American representative of the Common Ground, Search for Common Ground, says that all the problems in Burundi are the president, traceable to the president. Is that doesn't sound to me like they're searching for common ground or resolution.
So, Absolutely not. First of all, Pierre Nkurunziza is actually one of the better, if not the best, African president currently in the continent. He's actually achieved an awful lot since taking power in 2005. We must understand that Burundi is officially, I think, the second poorest country in the world. And the country was completely destroyed during the civil war. And in 2005, he took power. He's managed to reconstruct the country. He's actually built more schools since 2007. He had built more schools than the entire 50 years of independence. So he instituted policies that have been very good for working people, in the sense that he has had an emphasis on infrastructure. He made a law actually which requires people to provide free labor, community labor, on Saturdays to build schools and public infrastructure that people need. So he has created a kind of a national volunteerism, which is something that has given people a sense of hope that they have power to build their country. And so he's done actually very well, and he actually spends a lot of his time with poor people on weekends and so on. So he's very, very close. He's extremely popular. The government have made the claim that this problem, this violence, is really only in Bujumbura, the capital. And that is actually true. In most of the country, there are hardly any protests. The foreign-funded media tends to be concentrated in Bujumbura. But even in Bujumbura, you only have about four quarters of the capital where there's violence. Mm-hmm. So this is really being blown out of all proportion by the international press.
Yeah.
Of course, the French press have taken the side of the so-called rebels, the so-called oppositionists. And as I've explained, they are not really an opposition. These are people, in fact, many of them have criminal records, even if you read the official reports of the Canadian government, which I cited in my article. Many of these people have very, very dodgy backgrounds involved in racketeering and crime in Eastern Congo and so on.
Mm-hmm. What about the role of these radio stations, which seem to have foreign, almost all of them foreign connections, so-called independent stations? And in your article, you refer to someone that's rather well-known now, Samantha Powers, who seems to be a problem from hell. But she has some link to a key station. I believe it might have been one of the stations that hosted the coup leaders and was issuing statements on behalf of those who tried to make the coup. Could you speak on that subject?
Samantha Powers is heavily involved. She actually turned up there recently after the outbreak of violence. She has close connections to Alexis Sindouije, who is one of the opposition activists. He's the guy who formed a party called Movement for Solidarity and Democracy. It was originally actually called Movement for Security and Democracy, but the government wouldn't allow that name because the security is provided by the state. But it's kind of an indication of its ideology. Sindouije has been accused of terrorism and was arrested. He was caught, in fact, with a rebel group in Tanzania, and he escaped. How he escaped, I don't know. Probably through, I presume, pressure from either the Belgian or French embassies in Tanzania, but he's apparently now in Europe. This radio station, they founded that station
with her inspiration, right?
Yeah.
Well, and then he used that as a launch pad to make himself a political figure.
Sure. And it's called Radio Publique Afrique, I think. It's a RSA. And it's not a public radio. It's a private radio. So again, I mean, you know, it's extremely mendacious to call itself public radio. The big problem with the refugees is that the privately owned, foreign funded media has part of the strategy of destabilization was to spread rumors. So they've been spreading lots of rumors about genocide, an impending genocide. And that is essentially what the reason for thousands of people fleeing. But you know, since then, things have calmed down in many parts of the country, and tens of thousands of people have returned. But the strategy is a strategy for, I mean, I've studied a few of these color revolution strategies, and spreading false reports and rumors and sort of a strategy of tension and low-intensity warfare techniques are used very often. So spreading rumors, and then, of course, assassinations, bizarre assassinations, like the one we saw recently, where an opposition leader was assassinated yesterday, I think.
Yes.
That, for example, is a classic in these types of operations. The figure in question was a member of an opposition party and who actually had been elected in February, but is actually was considered by a lot of by many members of the party to be pro Nkurunziza. So he was certainly very unpopular in by the hardliners in that party, and it would be absolutely, I think, incredibly stupid of Pierre Nkurunziza to go assassinating leaders when he's got the entire Western press against him.
There certainly echoes there of the Rwanda story. I recall that everybody, there were people being assassinated when Habyarimana was the president, and every time the Western media immediately said it must have been Habyarimana.
Yeah.
And then subsequent history has shown, no, it was not.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I mean, they're doing this in Russia as well. They had this you know, opposition figure Nemtsov was shot recently, and I mean, anyone with any kind of brain would understand that you know, Putin is certainly not stupid. You have to be very stupid to be, you know. So, but this is part of the kind of psyops, I think, that's going on in Burundi. But it is worrying because, you know, the attacks are continuing. I gave some examples in my article of these attacks since 2005. I mean, this is a destabilization attempt that has been ongoing since 2005. There have been many, many incidents, attacks on refugees, blamed on the government, lots of terrorist attacks been blamed on the government, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a kind of low-intensity operation.
Yeah.
But it is intensifying in terms of its media coverage now. I mean, just the other day, you had, after the coup, for example, you had a hospital, Bumlek Hospital in Bujumbura, and some of the generals escaped to the hospital. And Al Jazeera ran a story or reported on a shooting, and I think the title of the headline was Hospital Attacked. And what actually happened, well, I managed to glean from different reports, comparing the French report with the Al Jazeera, it seems that police entered the hospital where many of the generals were being treated for their wounds, and the generals opened fire on the police and shot one of the police, and then there was an exchange of gunfire. But, of course, this was blown out of complete proportion by the media, as if, you know, the police had attacked a hospital and started shooting patients. You know, it was made look like that famous Iraqi...
The babies and the incubators.
Yeah, it was made look like that. I mean, if you read the article...
And, of course, it creates alarm.
They're attacking hospitals now.
It creates alarm, and people say, well, you must do something. I recall President Bush saying, oh, I have to do something about those babies. And we've had that here... where the prime minister will say, well, the reports today, they're so shocking, we have to do something. And, of course, you know, next thing you know, you have a small-scale war with a bunch of people killed based on no fact. We're speaking to Gerald O'Coleman, and the article is in Global Research titled, Are the U.S. and EU Sponsoring Terrorism in Burundi? One of the things I want to make sure I ask you about, I saw an article, I think it was Al Jazeera even, that said this, that the independent journalists and organizations, I guess stations, were unanimous in their criticism, I forget the word, another adjective, but their criticism of the government. How do we have so-called independent journalists functioning there, showing us about, you know, how to be objective, and all of them agree that the president's a bad guy. How does that happen?
It's astonishing. And, I mean, what is even more annoying is the fact that, you know, the government has a huge majority. They have something like 88 seats in the parliament, so, and they have huge support, the ruling party. And we don't hear anything about that. I mean, we don't get any kind of spokesman. We get, well, very, very rarely. But it's almost the opposition media have a complete monopoly on information coming out of the country. We hear activists say and opposition activists say and this opposition politician said, and very little from, you know, the Burundian intelligentsia who support the president. So, again, this is very typical. You can see this in all sorts of wars that the West has created. You can see in Syria, Libya, you know, there's a whole list of them, and it's exactly the same scenario, the same methodology, same modus operandi all the time. You just talk to opposition activists.
Yeah, I want to ask you about this, apropos of that. There's a, you identify an individual, I think is, pardon my pronunciation, Pigas, something, from the Lazard Bank, an owner of Le Monde, and you say he prefers he prefers civil society to government. And then you go on to quote and cite Mr. Gramsci, who knew a thing or two about such matters, on the, on what civil society is and how that concept is maybe misunderstood and abused. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, I think the point I was trying to make, well, first of all, Matthew Pigas, he's the director of Lazard Bank.
Pardon my mispronunciation.
And he's also the owner, a joint owner of Le Monde, which is, you know, the New York Times of France. He made that point that he absolutely loved the Arab Spring, thought it was great, and would like to see that spreading all around, you know, over Africa. Now, Pigas is someone who has extensive interests in Africa. His uncle is one of the media moguls of the entire Central African press, in fact, and has written books praising many dictators in that region. He made the point that they're really only interested in social media, civil society groups, and so on, and they're not really interested in dealing with hardline leaders in Africa anymore, and so on. The point I was making, the point he's making, of course, is that they don't want to have to deal with governments.
No, they want to get around them, right?
Yeah, these people are oligarchs. They don't want to have to, if they want to set up a business in Nigeria, whatever, they don't want to have to deal with these third world governments who have a requirement to pay teachers, civil servants, army, police, and so on. Even if you're a dictator, even if you're Mobutu, you have to run some kind of a state, if you want to survive as a state. So you have to pay people, you have to pay civil servants, you have to pay pensions, you have to try and do something. And that's still too much for the oligarchs now. They're like, no, we don't want to do any more of that. Forget social welfare,
Yes.
Forget all of this. We don't want any more local leaders. We just want to get in there with our security companies and do whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a form of recolonization through civil society, because the civil society movement is really about depoliticization. If you want change, you do it. The whole idea that you can have change without politics, whereas politics traditionally is the only way you can have change. If you really want change, it's through the political arena. That's why we have, parliaments and so on.
Yeah.
And businessmen don't want that to exist in developing countries, because no matter what kind of government you've got in power, they will eventually, they'll go and talk to the Chinese, they'll go and talk to the Russians, maybe buy weapons from them.
And maybe get a better price.
Get a better price. And they'll still, even no matter how, I mean, just give an example. It was in the Central African Republic, which is basically a French neo-colony. There was a leader there called Tassi, and he wasn't a particularly progressive leader, but the moment he actually said to French oil company Total that he wanted to the government to get a higher stake in the oil industry, the French replaced them immediately. And they replaced them with this guy called Bozizé in 2003. And then as soon as he went to Beijing and said to the Chinese, look, we've got some oil, you can have the exploration rights, he was gone in 2014. So and the French orchestrated that rebellion as well. So that's what happens. I mean, right now they're not interested in governments in the third world. They want to replace them with these so-called civil society movements.
Yeah. I really like that point and the citation of Gramsci. That the point that it's a it really makes for a monopolization by such people as this man from Lazard Bank.
Yeah,
I mean, he really takes over. It's an authoritarian move disguised as camouflaged as democratic.
Absolutely, and they're doing this by brainwashing the youth with all these pseudo revolutionary concepts. You know, I mean, I keep saying that.
They also have a lot of them on their payroll, right? I mean, we're all pretending these people are independent, but they don't have the money there to be buying radio, setting up radio stations. Somebody did that for them, and then somebody actually has to pay their salaries.
Sure, and I mean, they even pay them to go out and demonstrate. I mean, in Egypt, they were I actually remember during the Arab Spring listening to French state radio, listening to people talking about the money that they got from the U.S. Embassy. I mean, it's ridiculous. When I was in Syria a few months later in 2011, I remember hearing the same thing. You know, they're just buying youth groups. They're setting them up. It's the kind of an anti-politics. It's about turning people against the idea that you can change things through political leaders and through political means. And it's really sort of autocracy. It's mob rule. It's just get, you know, nihilistic youth onto the street, throwing petrol bombs and messing everything up and ranting and raving and shouting and screaming, while at the same time lying and pretending it's peaceful. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it creates chaos. And I think the U.S. foreign policy right now is in a sort of a creative chaos mode. They believe that chaos can, you know, they can manage chaos. And so when you go in, you destabilize a country, then it's pretty much easier after to redraw those lines and redraw, you know, get control of those regions where you want resources and so on.
Yeah. Well, that's I really agree with that point. Gerald O'Coleman, it's been a pleasure talking to you. The article is May 6th. 15 Global Research, Are the U.S. and EU Sponsoring Terrorism Burundi? A terrific article. We look forward to hearing from you again.
Thanks for the invitation, Phil, and looking forward to hearing from you.
Okie doke. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
CIUT 89.5 FM, Taylor Report. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. We're on we're also Facebook / The Taylor Report. And we have a website, taylor-report.com, where there's articles such as Mr. O'Coleman will be available, and of course the interviews that we've done over the years are available there.